It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 35 degrees under sunny skies. Today is Monday, March 31st, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. The 2014 Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery is over. The 48 permit holders caught the last remaining fish in this year's harvest limit and then some in a wild 45-minute opener Saturday afternoon right in front of downtown Sitka. The preliminary estimate from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for Saturday's harvest is just shy of 4,000 tons, bringing this year's total catch to 17,200 tons, about 900 tons more than the guideline harvest level. The final harvest numbers will be known once processing is complete. In both 2012 and 2013, seiners undershot their harvest limit significantly, as widespread spawning occurred just as fishing started. ADF&G will continue to conduct aerial surveys of the shoreline as the spawn progresses. At last word, there were 3.8 nautical miles of spawn. The herring typically continue spawning into late April, depositing eggs along 70 to 80 miles of beach. The department's research vessel Kestrel will also return to the Sound sometime after the first week in April to conduct dive surveys of egg deposition. These studies help determine the biomass forecast for future years and the associated harvest level. Meanwhile, the traditional subsistence harvest of roe-on hemlock and roe-on kelp is beginning in earnest in the areas around Middle Island. One subsistence fisherman at Sealing Cove Sunday morning reported making three large sets of hemlock branches, all of which had received a heavy coating of eggs. Well, herring season in Sitka is marked by reliable traditions. And this year, the Sitka Tribe, Sitka School District, and Sitka National Historical Park have added what they hope will become a new one, herring camp. During spring break, about 15 students in fifth grade through high school participated in a week of research into herring biology and ecology. KCAW's Rachel Woldholtz has this audio postcard.
What do we have, ladies? Okay, where are the pyloric cica?
Instructor Michelle Ridgway is examining the handiwork of sixth graders Abby Says and Cora Dow. The two Blatchley Middle School students have just finished dissecting a herring, and they're now placing pins to label the different body parts.
So would you guys describe for me what you're doing right now?
We're labeling a fish.
You're labeling a fish?
Yeah.
So what are you labeling?
Where the organs are, because it's cut open.
So describe this fish for me.
It has its eye poked out.
Next to the dissected herring is a small petri dish.
What's in this petri dish here?
An eye and a heart.
And that's the herring's heart right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, describe that for me.
It's kind of triangular.
And tiny. Very, very tiny.
And is the eye actually bigger than the heart?
Yeah.
So describe that eye for me.
It's about a centimeter, I guess, around. And it's kind of silvery, and then it has a pupil that's black. And then the back is kind of whitish, and it has blood on it.
And how did it feel when you were pulling that out of the fish?
Really disgusting. Squishy.
Ridgway quizzes her students on the different parts of herring anatomy.
Okay, and what are the two main functions of the air bladder?
Flotation and communication.
Communication, exactly. It's amazing these herring can make sound using their air bladder.
Yeah.
Okay, and primary function?
To help breathe.
Okay, gills, and they're extracting what from the water?
Oxygen.
And after a week of herring camp, they pass with flying colors.
Nice detailed work, ladies. Excellent. Internal anatomy. Okay, well, let's prepare your exhibit for the public. Ready to go? Let's go.
That was a postcard from KCAW's Rachel Woldholtz, who visited Sitka's first ever herring camp. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will review whether or not Southeast Alaska wolves should be listed for protection under the Endangered Species Act. The federal agency this month announced what's called a positive 90-day finding on a petition to list the Alexander Archipelago wolf. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Steve Brockman is Southeast Alaska coordinator for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
We determined that there was substantial information presented enough to make us think we probably should do a real status review.
Brockman says that status review will look at the best available information on wolf populations. The timing of when that review happens also depends on funding granted by Congress, which limits the number of petitions the agency can review each year.
Recently, that has been several years before we get that funding, so we do have an opportunity here to, well, really take advantage of the time lag to get some conservation in place so that we don't have to list the wolf. Honestly, the Fish and Wildlife Service would prefer to leave management of the wolf with the state of Alaska where it belongs. We do have a responsibility to list it if it needs to be listed. We intend to work with our partners at the state and at the Forest Service to make sure we don't have to do that when the time comes.
The petition to list the wolves was submitted in August of 2011 by two groups, the Center for Biological Diversity and Greenpeace. Larry Edwards is a forest campaigner with Greenpeace in Sitka.
Well, we're thrilled to finally have the finding. It has come over 2 years late, but we knew there was a strong case for pursuing a listing, and we're glad to see that the agencies decided that our petition had merit.
The groups argue that the region's wolf populations are declining and are vulnerable to hunting and trapping pressure, along with the loss of habitat from logging on the 17-million-acre Tongass National Forest. In particular, they cite past and future logging on Prince of Wales Island and say wolves on that island are in danger of extinction. State and federal managers closed hunting and trapping seasons in late March on Prince of Wales because hunters and trappers had reached a target number of wolves on the island. That's a concern for Edwards.
We have some great concerns about how the harvest cap was set for that. We think it was set way too high and that the illegal take of wolves wasn't adequately taken into account. So there are some significant management problems, both in terms of logging and I think how Fish and Game has been managing as well.
The groups also say two intensive management programs authorized by the state's Board of Game last year for areas near Ketchikan and Petersburg will put further pressure on wolf numbers. Doug Vincent Lang is director for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Division of Wildlife Conservation. He says Fish and Game believes the department has sustainably managed wolf populations in the region.
We're confident that any potential conservation concerns can be adequately addressed through existing mechanisms, including state regulatory mechanisms that are out there. And given that, we don't believe that wolves in southeast Alaska are at risk now or threatened with the risk of extinction in the foreseeable future. And as such, we don't believe that there's a justification for a 90-day positive finding for wolves in southeast Alaska, and we're disappointed with the service's decision.
The intensive management programs could eventually mean state-sponsored trapping of wolves in the two areas of southeast, designed to improve the number of wolves' main prey, deer. Vincent Lang notes the two intensive management programs have not yet been implemented.
Part of the reason is that we're collecting additional information both on deer and wolf in those two very small areas where the board had approved intensive management programs for the department to conduct once we had that baseline information. We've invested a significant amount of money in the next 3 or 4 years to inform the development of a status review, which this 90-day finding kicks off in terms of looking at wolf abundance, wolf distribution, and wolf genetic structures in southeast Alaska.
The federal agency's finding kicks off a 60-day public comment period on March 31st. Fish and Wildlife will be seeking input and information on southeast wolves. At a later date, the federal agency then begins a 12-month status review, which leads to a decision on whether the animals should be listed as threatened or endangered or not. The agency already determined a listing was not warranted for a prior petition submitted during the 1990s. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
And the Petersburg School District has hired Lisa Stroh of Valdez as their new superintendent. She'll start July 1st. Angela Denning reports from Petersburg.
Stroh was hired on a 3-year contract. Her starting salary is $122,750 for the first school year, and after that, it's negotiable. Board President Jean Ellis says the search for a new superintendent was a lengthy process, and they got a lot of input from the public in making their decision.
I think we felt that she was the best fit for our district, and probably part of her Alaska experience that she has and familiarity with the things that are going on in Alaska.
Stroh will be leaving her job as superintendent in Valdez for the Petersburg position. She has been in education for 3 decades in Alaska and Montana, where she is originally from. Ellis says Stroh will continue the good things Petersburg has going.
She did a lot of research into the Petersburg school system, was very familiar with us, and is very excited to be coming to a place that is functioning so well. And I feel like I'm so proud of our school district. I just think we're doing fantastic. And so it's great to have somebody that's excited to carry this on for us.
I am very honored to be your next superintendent.
Friday morning, Stroh met with the middle and high school student councils.
Anything I can do to support you, I will do that. You've got a great school already. But if there's anything that I can help you with, you let me know, okay?
Stroh says she will be asking the councils for their opinions from time to time. She asked the students what they thought the greatest thing was about their school. Senior Brett Martinson responded.
Everybody knows everybody, which is super cool in a school district. You know, I know almost all these kids, maybe not any of the younger ones, but all the ones in the high school, I know everybody, and I can, when we need to work together on group projects, it's really easy because you already kind of have an understanding of these other kids and you can work together, which I think is really important.
Stroh says she could relate to that because her youngest son, who is now in college, went to a small high school of 109 students.
That togetherness, that's what gets you when you graduate to go out and you succeed, because you've got that good sense of yourself.
Stroh acknowledges the big shoes she has to fill of outgoing Superintendent Rob Thomason. She says she plans to work with him in the transition.
That was Angela Denning from Petersburg. And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org. You can also read comments on our stories on Facebook by clicking on the Facebook link. And you can have KCAW News headlines tweeted directly to your smartphone, tablet, or computer by clicking on the Twitter link. It's just about 8:01. This is KCAW Sitka. Here's NPR.